I am Prasad Rao. I am the director of the regional support team of UNAIDS for Asia and the Pacific, stationed in Bangkok. And I would like to first welcome all of you and also congratulate the AIDS Society, IAS, and the ASAP, and particularly Bernard Cariassia, Ron Mickens, and the whole team for their vision in organizing a regional session on Asia and Pacific. Because for the first time, we see a regional session like this being organized in the international AIDS conferences. And in a conference of this magnitude, global issues and challenges always take precedence, and rightly so. But it is now quite evident that the epidemic and the response do not always follow a global pattern and have several regional variants. So the regional and country-level action is what ultimately makes the difference in terms of implementation of programs and their effectiveness in prevention as well as in treatment. And you all know that Asia and Pacific is a region mostly of low and concentrated epidemic countries, but still accounting for almost 5 million infections, second only to Africa. So it is not a small matter. An additional factor, ladies and gentlemen, is that Asia today is home to some of the fastest growing economies of the world, like China, India, Thailand, Malaysia, Vietnam. These are the emerging economies of the 21st century. And millions of people are getting out of poverty because of this economic advancement. But the flip side is that all the concomitant risk factors which contribute to a rapid spread of HIV are also getting aggravated due to large-scale migration, disposable incomes in the hands of first-generation migrants, who are mostly young men, and greater demand for paid sex and drug use. There is an estimation of something like 75 million men, young men, seeking paid sex, and 10 million women who are ready to sell sex to these 75 million men, and that is not a small number. These regional dynamics need to be properly understood, analyzed, and to do this today, we have an excellent panel of experts from the region who will present the various facets of the epidemic and the response before us here today. But before doing that, it is my pleasant duty to introduce my co-chair, Professor Myung Won Cho from South Korea. Myung Won Cho is professor of Konkuk University in Seoul, South Korea. He got his PhD in microbiology and immunology from the University of Arizona, and he also holds a master's degree in public administration from the Kennedy School of Government of Harvard University. He was a visiting scholar at the Center for AIDS Research at Stanford University, and currently Myung is the president of the AIDS Society of Asia and the Pacific, ASAP. As you all know that ASAP and UNAIDS collaborate together in organizing the regional conferences, the ICAPs, every 2 years. So that way it's a great pleasure to have Myung as my co-chair here, and I now pass the mic to Myung to make his introductory remarks.
Yeah, thank you, Prasada. You know, actually, especially in Asia, the civil society, you know, engagement and commitment are really crucial in responding to AIDS epidemic, especially because the you know, in Asia there are not enough, you know, resources, you know, in fighting off the HIV and AIDS. So, you know, as the custodian of ICAP, International AIDS, AIDS Congress, International Congress on AIDS in Asia and the Pacific, you know, we have this biannual meeting. The reason why we are organizing this meeting is that we want to create a, you know, cross, you know, sector and cross, you know, disciplinary synergies, such as, you know, social science with the biomedical science, and government with business, and perhaps, you know, even communities with business. And also we want to provide opportunities to create network of people, network of civil society, to ensure their empowerment. So last year we had a successful ICAP in Sri Lanka, And next year, in August, in 2008, I mean 9, we are going to have in a 9th International Congress on AIDS in Asia and the Pacific in Bali, Indonesia. So I'd like to invite all of you to go to the, you know, to come to the Bali for this International Congress on AIDS in Asia and the Pacific. And also I'd like to introduce, you know, my colleague, you know, Prasada Rao. You know, Prasada Rao is the director of the Asia-Pacific Regional Support Team of UNAIDS, you know, stationed in Bangkok. And Prasada is associated with AIDS program for the last 12 years. You know, first as the National Program Director of India's programs, later as the Permanent Secretary of Health in Government of India, and for the last 4 years in UNAIDS as the Asia-Pacific Director. Prasada represented his country in UNAIDS PCV and the Transitional Working Group, which defined the architecture of the Global Fund. Prasada also served as the Member Secretary of the Commission on AIDS in Asia. We co-chaired the Working Group on Newly Emerging Economies under the AIDS 2031 initiative. Today, we will have a chance to look at, you know, what the impediments which continue to hamper scale-up with presentation from civil society colleagues addressing stigma, discrimination, and implications for advocacy. So each of the four speakers will be given 12 minutes to speak, following which we will have 20 minutes for question and discussion. In the question and answer session, I hope colleagues from regions other than Asia would not hesitate to share and compare from their own experience.
Thank you, Myung, for those introductory words. So straight away, let us get on to the presentations. The first speaker on our list is Professor Aikichi Iwamoto from the Institute of Medical Sciences, University of Tokyo. Dr. Aikichi is a professor of the university. He has been in charge of the HIV clinic and the Division of Infectious Diseases in the Institute of Medical Sciences, University of Tokyo, since 1994. Professor Iwamoto chairs the National HIV Surveillance Committee of the Ministry of Health, Labor and Welfare of Japan since 2005. He is a Governing Council member of IAS since 2006. He is also an Executive Committee member of AIDS Society of Asia Pacific, representing IAS since 2008. So, over to Dr. Aikichi.
Thank you, Chairman, for kind introduction. As Chairman said, my task is usually patient care and clinical biology and immunology in the laboratory, but today I was asked to summarize the current epidemic in Asia and the Pacific. As already Dr. Rao said, in the recent update by UNAIDS, there were 5 million people living with HIV in Asia and the Pacific in 2007. 380,000 people were newly infected. Equal number of people died from AIDS-related illness. Countries in Southeast Asia, such as Thailand, Cambodia, and Myanmar, were hit by HIV in 1980s and have still high burden of the epidemic. There are countries with rapid growing epidemics, such as Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, and Vietnam. Although at a slower pace, new HIV infections are also increasing steadily in populous countries such as China and Bangladesh. Early wave of HIV epidemic hit Thailand, Cambodia, and Myanmar in mid to late 1980s. In Thailand, HIV prevalence among injecting drug users rose dramatically from virtually 0 to 40% between 1988 and 1989. 44% of sex workers in Chiang Mai were infected with HIV. In 1991, HIV prevention and control were put into the national priority, and the budget was increased almost 20-fold. Massive public campaign on AIDS and 100% condom program was initiated. Cambodia echoed the similar strategy. Both countries could see substantial decrease of HIV prevalence in the country since late 1990s. Even the success in the general population, the prevalence among the injecting drug users stayed very high in Thailand. Recently, prevalence of HIV among men who have sex with men has been increasing sharply. In Thailand and Cambodia, HIV epidemic in the marginalized population, such as injecting drug users and female sex workers, led to the subsequent tsunami waves of the epidemic among male clients, their wives, and their children. Recently, HIV epidemic has spread to other marginalized population, such as men who have sex with men, migrant workers, and so on. These overlooked population are under stronger stigma and discrimination, which constitute major barriers to access prevention. In Indonesia, estimated number of people living with HIV almost tripled from 2001 to 2007. Overlapping risks of drug injection and unprotected sex have been pointed out. In Papua New Guinea, the number increased more than five times from 2001 to 2007. The epidemic is growing in other countries such as Vietnam. There are almost 5 million injecting drug users in our region. Outbreaks of HIV infection among injecting drug users have occurred frequently in various places since early 1980s. Injecting drug use is a major risk factor of HIV infection in countries such as Vietnam, Malaysia, Pakistan, and China. Injecting drug use and sex works are overlapping risk factors and form a complex and serious epidemic in our region. The population of women living with HIV has increased from 26% in 2001 to 29% in 2007 in Asia. 150,000 children under 15 years old were infected with HIV. 24,000 children were newly infected with HIV, and 80,000 children died due to AIDS in 2007. Even in the era of highly antiretroviral therapy, many people are dying for AIDS. The great majority of countries are in need of urgent access and scale-up of antiretroviral therapy. Even in Thailand, which has scaled up remarkably, needs better regimens. All the generally available regimens contain D4T, which is hardly used anymore in the developed countries. Each country has different histories of HIV epidemic. Several modes of transmission are present, sometimes in a row, sometimes overlapping. 60% of the population live in Asia. The two most populous countries in the world, having over 1 billion people, are present in our region. Even a low prevalence would create a big burden. In India, it was thought once that India had the largest number of people living with HIV in the world. Although lower estimation was announced recently, it is mainly due to the expanded and improved surveillance system, The epidemic in India has to be monitored carefully. In conclusion, prevention is extremely important in the densely populated Asia and the Pacific. Strong will and strong commitment of the government and the public to prevent the expansion of HIV epidemic is mandatory. Many people helped me to prepare the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker is Dr. Sunatha Samarakun. She is presently a medical specialist, National STD AIDS Control Program of the Ministry of Health, Sri Lanka, and also serves as examiner and supervisor, Postgraduate Institute of Medicine in Colombo. She was co-chair of the very successful AIDS ICAP, which was held in Colombo in August 2007. You know, ICAP and UNAIDS are the co-primary sponsor of ICAP. Today, you know, she's going to talk about the key messages from the latest International Congress on AIDS in Asia and the Pacific and response beyond borders. Dr. Sudhakar.
Thank you very much. The key messages from the 8th International Congress on AIDS in Asia and the Pacific and response beyond borders. The 8th ICAP was held in Sri Lanka, a developing country categorized as a country with a low prevalence of HIV infection. As you see in the slide in front of all of you, we got a theme called Waves of Change, Waves of Hope. We all live in hope, whether we are HIV positive or HIV negative. For HIV positive people, survival as much as for HIV negative people is the important criteria, and the quality of life, which was addressed at the 8th ICAP. ICAP gave the opportunity to discuss the epidemic in Asia, which shows great diversity, both in timing and severity. The two main driving elements of the Asian epidemic, sex workers and men who have sex with men, were addressed in several fora. Human rights, gender equality, testing issues, political leadership are areas which I will present today. Focus on MSM. The importance of playing a major role by this important category of people in advocacy and support for regional and global networks, which would provide the pivot on which people could lead the scaling up of universal access, was highlighted over and above all the other presentations. Launch of the Asia-Pacific Coalition for Male Sexual Health and HIV was a major milestone at the conference. Human rights issues regarding the issues in the Asia-Pacific and also the rest of the globe were taken into consideration. A strong statement was issued on the appreciation of basic human rights and concepts of equality and security as applied to rights and sentiments are fundamental. It was stressed that the trust of the activists is reducing and more momentum should be given for activism across the globe. The group from China highlighted the positive people's difficulties, their denial of right to freedom of association, holding meetings, and accessing legal services for protection against harassment. Launch of the handbook on HIV and human rights for national human rights institutions took place. It was brought to light that there are no complaint handling mechanisms and immediate action should be taken for provision of redress and compensation for HIV-related human rights violations. The need to advocate for sound legal and policy frameworks for managing AIDS response at the national level was flagged as a key towards people living with HIV having equal access to a variety of services. The importance of developing health, economic and social policies which are responsive to the needs and aspirations of people living with HIV was given due attention. Gender equality was stressed with the role of women playing a key figure in the Asia-Pacific region. Prevention of mother-to-child transmission, particularly if you label it as prevention of parent-to-child transmission, was given due consideration. Sexual and reproductive health linkages have to be established so that people living with HIV and marginalized groups are given high priority. The high-level ministerial meeting was attended by several health ministers in the region and their secretaries. Moving from the corridors of power to people's backyards were debated. However, we need to see where we are today. Testing issues were discussed at great length, which is debatable today, whether we are going for BCT or we are moving towards provider-initiated counseling and testing. It was emphasized that case-finding mission is important, however, not forgetting the fact that informed consent and confidentiality has to be attached to counseling. The issues of migrant workers were migrant workers being tested without proper counseling at the request of the destination country is being debated continuously without much answers as yet today. Business community in response to AIDS was a very positive move in a low prevalence country where several business leaders got together so that they form a coalition which will promote the promulgation and enacting effective legislation for HIV policies in the workplace. The coalition will also encompass health, social, cultural, economic factors in corporate policy as these are considered as interlinked factors for vulnerability to HIV infection. The launching of the Portraits of Commitment by the Asia-Pacific Leadership Forum was a significant milestone in documenting the tireless efforts of a group of advocates from the South Asia, which inspires the work against fighting of AIDS. Problems in the Asia and the Pacific were highlighted. UNAIDS with other UN agencies called upon all countries to scale up universal access for prevention, treatment and care. However, we should still not forget that we have not been able to dispel stigma and discrimination. It was stressed that immediate action should be taken to overcome the barriers faced by the most at-risk groups, the sex workers, the drug injectors, the men who have sex with men, the transgenders, and bring them to the forefront of all activities and making them the bigger actors of the universal access theme. The success behind the harm reduction and barriers in implementing them were showcased. Legal obstacles to the use of methadone in most countries in the region, despite the fact that methadone has been on the WHO essential list since 2005, was discussed. Attention was given to the launching of the minimum standards for civil society participation in universal access by the Seven Sisters, which is asked to be used as an important tool for promoting greater involvement of the civil society. Specific issues of groups in Papua New Guinea were discussed as their participation was high compared with other countries in the region. We'll need to look forward to the 9th ICAP to find answers which were left as gaps in the 8th ICAP. What happened during the last 24 months? What happened regarding human rights issues? What happened regarding the PICT issues and the linkages of sexual and reproductive health and HIV linkages? We are looking forward for answers to these gaps. Before I close, just a word on the response beyond borders. It was important to mention the focus at the first Asian consultation on HIV prevention related to drug use. The policy harmonization is vital as coordination and coherence between law enforcement and health sector is essential. Link UNGAS on drugs with UNGAS on HIV. Women who use drugs, they have their special needs which need to be focused. Hepatitis and injecting drug users, the exorbitant prices of some of the drugs need to be closed down. Drug users' involvement as nothing for us without us needs to be looked at. The eighth ICAP would not have been a success if not for all these players. The local organizing committee, which worked tirelessly to bring about 2,500 delegates, making a successful 8th ICAP, is highlighted probably in all Asia-Pacific region conferences that were held beyond 2007. I take this opportunity to thank all of you for being here and opening the doors for everyone to take a look at what Asia and Pacific is heading on. And I take this opportunity to thank Bernard, Mara, and Pascal for their valuable advice in preparation of this presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sujata, for that excellent summary of the issues that were raised in the ICAP and what need to be taken forward in the next ICAP. We now have the presentation from Maura Elaripe Mia, who is the current JIPA advocacy officer with AUSAID in Papua New Guinea. Australia HIV and AIDS program in Papua New Guinea is a large program, and Maura also serves as a board member of IGAT Hope, which is the network, national network of the people living with HIV in PNG. As an advisor to the Asia-Pacific Network of People Living with HIV, the APN+, and also the Asia-Pacific Women Representative on the International Steering Committee of International Community of Women Living with HIV, the ICW. Maura's work focuses heavily on advocacy and activism around formulation of appropriate policy and programs on HIV, around the issues of JIPA, access to treatment, care and support, human rights, and leadership in Papua New Guinea, and also in the Asia and the Pacific region. Maura, you have the floor.
Thank you. My topic will be on key advocacy issues. First part will be looking at Papua New Guinea, the advocacy issues within Papua New Guinea, and the second part will be within the Asia-Pacific region as a whole. Okay, some of you might not know where Papua New Guinea is, so PNG is just at the northern tip of Australia. Overview of the PNG HIV and AIDS status. PNG has a generalized HIV epidemic, which is a one-on-one ratio. And the number of young women infected with HIV is rising fastest. So the main mode of transmission is through heterosexual intercourse. Advocacy challenges within PNG. Local commitment is weak. There is no local commitment within the political arena. The health system is also very weak, the infrastructure, the procurement, and lack of champions in key areas like treatments, prevention, care and support. And also the geographical issues within our country. We have a diverse culture and 800 languages, which makes advocacy a real nightmare. The successes of Advocate PNG, and I'm just going to go through some of the successes, are the passing of the HIV and AIDS Prevention and Management Act by the Parliament in 2003, which has really helped people living with HIV public. And one of the successes was PNG produced the first country report to UNGAS this year, which is a major success. And I'd like to thank UNAIDS for their support in assisting PNG in producing the report. Also, establishment of the National Network of Positive People in Papua New Guinea, which is IGAT Hope, has also been a major step in advocacy. And one of the successes is that there has been an establishment of the Independent Review Group, the IRG, reviewing performance of the planned activities against the national, against the objectives of the National Strategic Plan of Papua New Guinea, which is 2006 to 2010. And PNG is one of the countries that has taken up this best practice, and it has been a real success for us. Some of the recommendations around advocacy for Papua New Guinea is we have a National AIDS Council Secretariat, but we don't have a National AIDS Council itself. So it was abolished last year in July, but that needs to be reinstated in order to facilitate some of the issues that are affecting our country. And we need to also step up advocacy and communication training for positive people in Papua New Guinea. Currently, positive people don't know a lot of, about advocacy, and it's also a challenge and a hindrance to our programs. And one of the other pressing issues is, and this is a recommendation also, that to stop provider-initiated tests without informed consent and pre-test counseling, because the provider-initiated testing has been rolled out in PNG, and from what I am seeing on ground, it's a nightmare. Pregnant women are just being tested without them being given the choice to opt out. There is no opt-out in this case in PNG. Okay, advocacy overview within the Asia-Pacific region. Drug use and sex work are the major drivers of the Asian epidemic. The recent formation of international network of people who use drugs in Asia-Pacific region was launched at the ICAP, 8th ICAP in Sri Lanka, which is a great step towards advocacy issues around drug users. And the Commission on AIDS report provides great advocacy opportunities as well, yet migrants are completely left out of this report. Advocacy challenges in Asia-Pacific region. Access to second-line antiretroviral drugs is a big problem within Asia-Pacific region. Most of the positive people can't access and so can't participate actively in advocacy as well. The meaningful involvement of drug users still remains tokenistic in Asia-Pacific region, just like for other at-risk population. And to stop provider-initiated testing without informed consent. Some of the advocacy successes in Asia-Pacific region, the launching of the Australian Harm Reduction Project and at UNAIDS PCB in April 2008. Also, the launching of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs for the Asia-Pacific region was during the ICAP. And one of the successes is the launching of the Portraits of Commitment, a book by the Asia-Pacific Leadership Forum. And this book is a fantastic book, and I'm really thankful to the APLF for producing this. It's a great advocacy tool. And the setup of specific subgroups within Asia-Pacific Network of Positive People, such as the Positive Women's Group, the Positive IDUs Group, and the Positive MSM Group. Recommendations. It is recommended support. There should be continuous support made to the international network of people who use drugs in Asia-Pacific in the GOA Declaration. Second-line ARVs and hepatitis C treatment must be made accessible and available throughout the region. Create income-generating projects for women and children, and stop provider-initiated tests where there is no informed consent or pre-test counseling involved. And I don't know about other regions and other countries, but for what I have seen within PNG, it's a real problem, where people are not opting out and healthcare workers because there is the imbalance and the power dynamics between the healthcare workers and the clients. The clients can't opt out. And healthcare workers tell tell clients that you have no right to, you know, I know what I'm doing, you should all go through testing, and this is wrong. It's a clear breach of human rights. Lastly, I just want to leave this quote with all of you. If we cannot now end our differences, at least we can help make the world safe for diversity. Thank you all.
I think this has been a very good, you know, first joint session. So right now I'd like to give you a chance to ask questions and comments. Oh, one more, I'm sorry. Okay. I love Vince. Mr. Vince, you know, Chrysostomo is coordinator of the Coalition of Asia-Pacific Regional Network on HIV and AIDS, which was formerly known as the Seven Sisters, with regional headquarters in Bangkok. Vince is going to talk about the key learning and lessons from Asia-Pacific. Vince?
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. I will be talking a little bit about the Commission on AIDS in Asia, and then I will be highlighting a successful project that's in the region. The Commission on AIDS in Asia was an independent body that was established in July 2006, and it was chaired by Dr. I'm sorry, I can't read the slide. Fasada, can you help me with this? Can you say the name? Okay. Sorry about that. I apologize. Who was chairman of the Economic Advisory Council to the Prime Minister of India. It brought together nine of the region's leading development economists, epidemiologists, sorry about this, policymakers, and civil society representatives working on the AIDS epidemic. In 2007, a report was produced and analyzed the HIV epidemic in Asia from a wider socioeconomic perspective. And also medium to long-term implications. What Asia can share with the world. In a few instances, strong and focused efforts here brought striking results on a large scale, has examples of Cambodia, Thailand, and the Indian state of Tamil Nadu reveal. And I just want to break a minute from my slide presentation, because one of the other lessons that's learned, which is actually not going to be covered in my presentation, is that this independent commission on AIDS in Asia, the report, it also featured a consultation by civil society where over 600 people responded. And from this consultation, we were able to get come up with a programmatic framework that those of us in civil society working in the field can use as an advocacy tool. And it also showed that what we as a region, because, you know, it's often said that it's so hard to work in Asia, it's so hard, you know, but honestly, with a little effort and a little support, I really do feel that Frika, who should be doing this presentation, said to me, needs to be acknowledged, because she's a young woman living with HIV. She is a leader in our community, but she took it upon herself to do this consultation. But she couldn't do it without the help of everybody, UNAIDS RST, who were incredibly supportive. And in the end, we as civil society have a tool that not only talks about the issues of our region, but also gives us a framework in which we can connect to the other regions. So for me, it's an even more universal tool. And when this was launched in March, of 2007, this year at the UN, Secretary Ban Ki-moon has made several comments which supporting MSM and drug users, which for our region is really historic. And so I just wanted to put that out there. It's not in my presentation, and I hope that's okay. But for our community to hail this hero, Frika, and her work, it really is a lesson that I think needs to be acknowledged. So I'm going to talk about this presentation here. This intervention, this project that happened in Tamil. Okay, so the first case of HIV infection in India was detected in Tamil Nadu in 1986. And as the number of infections grew, the AIDS Prevention and Control Project, APAC, was started in TN and Pondicherry in 1995 under a tripartite agreement between Voluntary Health Services, VHS, which is a non-charitable government organization in Chennai. APAC concentrated on high-risk population groups for targeted interventions, including long-distance truck drivers, female commercial sex workers, tourists, slum populations, factory workers, men having sex with men, and migrant workers, a network of 72 carefully selected NGO partners, which delivers the intervention programs in TN and Pondicherry. The program designed for implementation was for high-risk behaviors, not only to protect people that practice high-risk behaviors, but also to those who are contracting, like the slide says, HIV, but preventing the spread to the general population. The programs were implemented in 21 districts of Tamil Nadu and Pondicherry since 1995, and the program cost U.S. dollars about $25 million for the second phase. The agreement between the representatives of the community organizations, government, and funding agencies, this is how it worked. A community needs assessment was carried out and to determine which materials were required for behavior change. There were specific policies and procedures that were developed, and 72 NGOs delivered the programs. The program was governed by a management committee where its members include governments, NGOs, and donors, and the program was carefully monitored and evaluated with... So thematic areas of the intervention, these are all the groups that it hit. Prevention along the highway, it was PATH. Women in prostitution, which was WIP. Slum intervention program, which was SIP. Tourists and women in prostitution. Industrial intervention program, men having sex with men, MSM, and the migrant intervention program, which is MIP. And all those names are very cute. So the strategies that were adopted, spreading culturally sensitive messages through peer education, promoting condom use, street plays, promotion of quality services, interpersonal communication, behavior surveillance surveys, and it created a healthy environment for people living with HIV so that they and their families can lead normal lives. Okay, the results. Condom usage among female sex workers with clients has increased from 56 in 1996 to 85.9 in 2004. The voluntary procurement of condoms has shown a steady increase to 87% in 2004 from 11% in 1996. Risk perception among the female sex workers has increased from 42% at baseline in 1996 to 77% in 2004. An involvement of truckers and helpers with a non-regular partner has declined to 35.7% in 2004 from 48% in 1996. The results are condom usage of truckers and helpers with paid partners has increased by 88.5% in 2004 from 55 in 1996. Increase in condom distribution from 17,000 outlets in 1996 to 56,505 outlets in 2004. And an increase in sale of condoms to 1 million pieces in 2004. And this is kind of just a chart that kind of maps the results of the BSS. And I think I will just leave it at that, and we can open the floor for questions.
Thank you, Vince, for that presentation. What Vince tried to do was just picked up one recommendation out of the Commission on AIDS in Asia, that is focus programs, and then tried to illustrate it with an example from India. Now we have time for a question answer session, and I thank all the speakers to stick to the time. In fact, they have allowed a little more time for discussion by completing their presentations in a shorter time. So those who would like to ask questions, there is a mic kept here. You may kindly come here, introduce yourself and the organization you represent, and also the panelists to whom you want to pose the question. If the questions are in English, there's no problem, but if there is a question which has to be asked in Spanish, there is an arrangement for translation. I think that can be utilized. So now the floor is open for questions.
It's Robert from Robert Baldwin from Asia Pacific Network of People with HIV. My question is directed to Maura, and thanks for a great presentation, Maura. You mentioned several times about problems to do with provider-initiated HIV testing and non-consent, particularly in your experience in Papua New Guinea. Would you like to share any ideas you have for how we could challenge this appalling state of health provision?
Thank you, Robert. From what I have seen in the PNG experience, it's the PICT, they're just starting to roll it out. But what I would like to see is to train healthcare workers properly in this area and to also get consult with civil society organizations, because in the PNG experience, civil society organizations were not consulted before the government went ahead and rolled out the program. And it has been a real concern to all of us. And the National Network of Positive People, which I belong to in PNG, IGAD Hope, is also concerned about this, because once we are testing people left, right, and center without their consent, and they are tested positive, what services do we have in place? What kind of treatment do we have? Because treatment is a big issue in PNG as well, and services are not reaching the people. So what I would like to see is, if we want to scale up PITC, scale up treatments, scale up care and services, care and counseling services, train healthcare workers, and get the procurement and infrastructure of the healthcare system in place. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Narisa from the YWCA of the Philippines. Thank you for the very nice presentation. It's very enlightening, and we've realized how the extent of your work in the Asia-Pacific region. My first question is addressed to all the panelists. To what extent is the role of young women in the discussing table, and as well as those young women who are tested positive? And my second question, directed to the lady in the middle, you've mentioned about mandatory testing on destination countries. What is the extent of mandatory testing upon return to their respective countries of all migrant workers?
Thank you. I think the first question is about young positive women and how their problems should be addressed. Am I correct? Yeah. I think maybe Sujata, you can try to answer this question, and the second question can go to Maura.
Regarding young women, I think most countries are concentrating through the civil society organizations to reach out to young women. particularly if you look at prevention of mother-to-child transmission, in low-prevalence countries, the first prong, that is to prevent HIV among young men and women, is being brought to light. So in that context, and also preconception counseling, couple counseling, those are coming up in the Asia-Pacific region, so that women are given an insight to gender equality, their decision making, their role as mothers to be, and their role as mothers. So it's emerging. I think in the 8th ICAP, there were so many young women groups who started advocating for their rights and equality. Then your second question about mandatory testing. The decision is by the destination country, but on what rules and regulations, they emphasize on the mandatory testing, I really don't know. But as I told you, this debate has been going on and on. But as far as I know, there isn't a positive answer. That again is without any consent and counseling.
Yeah. Okay. My name is Shubha Raghun. I'm from India. This question is for the chair, Mr. Prasad Rao. Two questions. The AIDS Commission report is indeed very nice, but the UNGAS report that was unveiled at UNGAS did show that none of the countries in Asia-Pacific, except for Thailand, is able to reach close to even 50% of targets set for universal access. So I just want to know whether where we are with it and what are the plans for scaling up so that we at least reach 50%, if not universal access, by 2010. That's number one. And in your remarks, you said India, China, and Vietnam, all of us are global, developing global economies, and three of the countries does produce antiretroviral drugs. If we could talk about, were there any plans by UNAIDS and others to facilitate dialogues in getting second-line drugs free to all the countries?
I think maybe I will answer the questions when I do the summing up. Is it okay? Because I don't want to take the time of the panelists. So when I do my final summing up, I will try to answer your questions. Thank you. Next.
Hello. Okay. Thank you. My name is Ton Smits, representing the Asian Harm Reduction Network based in Thailand. And thank you all very much, the panelists, for the presentations, but also both the co-chairs for their useful introductions. I have actually two questions / comments, one actually for the co-chairs and one for Vincent. Maybe I can start with the latter one. Looking at the Asia-Pacific region, to quite an extent, we are looking at countries with what I would consider non-democratic systems. Now, how do we take on the challenge to put in place the GEPA principles also for vulnerable groups within those non-democratic systems, especially when drug use, sex work, and in quite a few places, men having sex with men are criminalized issues? So I see that as a major challenge for the GEPA principle, and I would like to hear his views on that. The second question is relating to resource allocation in particular. We have heard from several speakers here and before how significant the IDU component is in driving epidemics in the region. Yet, when we reflect on the HLM meeting in New York and presentations there, we know actually that very little funding is allocated for prevention in general. Lots of it goes to treatment. And of the prevention, even a smaller proportion goes to HIV prevention, in particular for the vulnerable groups such as drug users. So while we know it's most effective in containing epidemics there in early stages, actually very little goes there. So it would be good to have some suggestions on how we can move forward on that agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, I think for the second question, which is the first question, which is addressed to Vince, maybe Vince, you can answer that.
Okay.
Yeah.
In my opinion, in order for some of these things to happen, I mean, there's a few things. First, there has to be a conscious effort made to include people living with HIV in all responses to the epidemic. When it comes to what is meaningful, I think that needs to be determined by them. And I think, this again is my opinion, I think right now that we are on the verge of like something really different happening. Like I know from my work in Indonesia, I think we're ready for a change, but I think civil society and these key populations, these networks, I really do believe that we have to come together and we have to kind of put aside our differences and work together so we can maximize. I mean, the Global Fund has created these positions on the CCM, so I think we need to come together. We need to figure out a process, just figure out who represents us, who they want, who when they speak, they are speaking for, and get them into these positions. Because, you know, one of the things that if, you know, they're going to create, if they're going to create these positions for us, we have to be there. At the same time, those people in charge of these positions and these processes, like the CCMs and wherever, their processes need to be transparent. They need to share information. They need to consult. And by consult, I don't mean just bring people into a room and ask them what they want. They actually have to act on what people say. Often in this region, when we're brought to a consultation, we're asked what we think and what we feel and all these things, and then it just seems to go in one ear and out the other. And I think we have to all hold each other accountable to these, because I think all of us know about a lot of the things that happen, and we either just look the other way or we don't. But I think it's everybody working together. And looking at the opportunities that we have, because I think we really do. There are a lot of opportunities now. And like I said, I mean, one of the things that kind of always bothers me when we're in is like when we talk about the issues, that the issues never seem to change. So I think that we who represent, who are from these networks, these most vulnerable populations, we need to figure out, so how can we change that and really take it upon ourselves to do so? And that's actually why I wanted to mention Frika in my presentation, because she's someone who's doing that.
Thank you. About the first question, again, as in the earlier case, I will try to answer it at the end. The next speaker.
Hello, Charles Farthing from Philadelphia in New York. My question is for Vincent. Vincent, I was incredibly impressed with that project in Tamil Nadu that you told us about. And I wonder, is that going to grow and to go to other states in India? And is it going to be highlighted a lot? It seems to me that that should be used as an example of what can be done and be spoken about a lot.
Well, I think part of the reason for including this that in this presentation was to show that there have been successful programs and projects in India, I mean in this region, and I mean I'm hoping that people would take it upon themselves. I mean that's why we talk about what works. Though sometimes I think in Asia often people relate more to what doesn't work, but I mean, that's just me, but I think that's why we presented it here, so that hopefully people can see that this is something that's been done, it's something that should be commended, and it's something that should be duplicated.
Thank you. Last question. One more, sorry.
My name is Tripti Tandon. I'm with the Lawyers Collective in India. My question is no one in particular, but I guess the panel can answer. In Asia, we've seen that the epidemic is pretty similar and the response required is also similar for countries. But we've had a peculiar situation where it seems that countries are not learning from each other. We've had countries that have exemplary legislation, anti-discrimination legislation, but other Asian countries lag behind. We have best practices on harm reduction, but the very neighbor has the worst practice when it comes to dealing with drug users. I'm talking about China and Thailand. So would you consider that the potential from learning from each other, countries, cross-learning, etc., has been explored, not explored, and what can the Commission and its report do on that front? And a related question is there a potential for Asian countries to also, given that they're reeling under similar problems, to take up common or similar positions at international level which actually reflect the interests of Asian people? And here I'm talking about, say, the talks at the World Trade Organization when it comes to access to medicines, or the forthcoming review of the UNGAS on drugs, say at the CND, where Asian countries can forge a common position in support for drug treatment and harm reduction. So, and if that's possible, what would it require on our part as civil society?
Thank you. I think Sujata, maybe you can answer, because the cross-learning is something which Sri Lanka has done once and by sending a HIPO delegation to some of the Asian countries. So maybe you can try to answer this question. Why countries are not learning from each other? That's a very good question.
It's a very difficult question to answer, why people are not learning from each other. But of course, as mentioned, the legislature needs to be changed, learning from certain exercises. And that is not an easy thing to do. I think somebody mentioned undemocratic approaches. So we need to change the undemocratic to a democratic framework. But I think all this takes a little time. But as you suggested, at an international level, there should be some kind of a harmony of international laws and regulations and what's happening in the Asia-Pacific field, and learning the best practices and across borders to have a mixture so that your legal framework, your cultures and your religious attitudes are not hampered by copying what is being conducted in another country. But I think that's a very difficult task to achieve, but nevertheless, you need to go ahead.
Thank you. Last question.
Hi, my name is Dennis Tri. I'm from, I work for the New York State AIDS Institute. I just want to make a point. Probably a lot of people already know that attitude change is totally different from behavioral change in healthcare prevention. Let me give you an example. Last 2 years ago, New York City implemented a program to distribute free condoms. And after a year, New York City distributed about 3 million condoms. But actually, does people actually using it? Not necessary. This year, there's a research program evaluation to identify how many people actually using condom in New York City. There's about 40% of the people who has more than one partner, sex partner, and they're using, so that means around 55 to 60% of the people who has more than one partner did not use condom recently. So I just want to point out, in a healthcare prevention, attitude change and behavioral change, people get a condom, they may not actually using it. So, thank you.
Thank you. That's a very interesting observation, and any of the panelists would like to take that? It is attitude change which is needed, not just behavioral change. One of you? Sujata again. Or Maura, would you like to answer that? Maybe Sujata can field that question.
I do agree, as much as there needs to be a behavior change, the attitudes of the healthcare workers, the policymakers, the people living with HIV, all these attitudes need to be changed if we are going to achieve some of these UNGAS indicators, the targets, which we are not even halfway through. I think if we all work together and assess by even like ASAP or some UNAIDS or some agency and see why aren't we reaching the targets? Is it the attitude or is it because we really can't make a behavior change? I think attitudes precedes all this, but there should be concrete evidence.
Thank you very much. I think that brings us to the end of the question answer session. I think there have been excellent presentations and really very stimulating questions. And some of the issues which were raised are so typical for Asia and the Pacific region. So it really again highlights why we need to address the problems of this region in a very special manner. This region accounts for almost 60% of the world's population. It cannot be just regarded as one of the 7 or 8 regions in the world. It is the most important region. If you really want to control AIDS in the world, it has to be controlled in Asia. The biggest battles for AIDS have to be won in Asia. I think that is the message probably which we need to give. For example, the point that was raised about the PITC, the provider initiated testing and counseling, Maura was absolutely right. Maybe in a high prevalence setting, PITC is something which has been prescribed. But then if you just apply it across the board to all the other regions which are low prevalence like in Asia, you are going to end up with this sort of a problem. So whoever lays policy and whoever lays programs need to look at the sensitivities at the regional level, at the country level, and then apply those things. We can't just look at every problem through a global lens. We need to look at the country and regional lens. That is a very strong message which has come. There are a couple of questions about resource allocation. Yes, I think definitely resource allocation to prevention, especially prevention which produces an impact, is still very much suboptimal in this region. It has come out of a number of observations, including the report of the Commission on AIDS in Asia. And even among those groups which are addressed, the injecting drug users and men who have sex with men still get a much lesser share of the resources for prevention programs. But definitely we could see some improvement here, mainly because of some strong programs taken by donors like AUSAID. We have now 3 very large AUSAID-funded programs running in this region, addressing injecting drug use and harm reduction. So I think countries are also now coming forward to put more resources into injecting drug use interventions, which is a very positive thing. I think same is happening in MSM also, not so much because the countries want to do, but because there is tremendous pressure from below. I think the APCOM is a great thing that has happened in this region. And this particular organization, the way they have been able to highlight the issues, the way they have been highlight the problems of the MSM populations, I think is really great. And I'm sure that the countries will take notice of it and will allot greater resources. The question by Subha about UNGAS. Well, definitely UNGAS monitoring is being done by governments, by UN, but also there is a need to do monitoring by the civil society. And I think the ICAPs are excellent organizations, excellent, I think, platforms for a civil society type of monitoring on UNGAS. What Sujata has presented here is something like a monitoring exercise as to what are the problems identified in Colombo, how far they have been addressed, and where we are moving on that. Maybe we have to find answers to that in Bali. That is a parallel exercise which need to go, but the government monitoring definitely has shown, we have recently done an analysis, that we have categorized the countries into 3, the achievers, the early achievers, countries which are on course, but I think need a very strong push, and third is countries which are still have to do a lot of work if they have to come anywhere near the UNGAS targets. And you are right, except Thailand and Cambodia, today I don't think any country can be called that, yes, this country is going to achieve the universal access target. And that is a very, 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 very disturbing thought in Asia and the Pacific. The same is the case in other regions also. Yesterday we had in the plenary. So I think next 3 years is going to be really crucial, and we need to put a lot of effort both from the governments, civil society, donors, communities, everybody, to see that some of these countries which are lagging behind, they put that resources and then they do that tremendous amount of programming in the next three years or so to achieve these targets. The other question that was asked was about the Tamil Nadu program. I think you are right. It is not just one program. Vince has just projected one such program. I think there is a good amount of acceleration in terms of repeating or replicating such programs in India. Maybe Sujata Rao, who is here, who knows better about this. But I think definitely the focused intervention programs, especially focusing on sex workers, IDUs and MSMs, I think received a tremendous boost, and many of them followed the type of example which Vince has shown here. So that is again something which is a good pointer. About second generation drugs, yes, there should be a regional dialogue. At least these 3 or 4 countries in this region like China, India, Thailand, which produce generic drugs, maybe at some point of time need to come together.
need to have some regional position on availing generic, making available generic drugs. And Thailand has shown the way by issuing compulsory licenses on generic drugs for antiretroviral treatment. I think that need to be done by other countries also when there is a need. But where is the need? Do we have an alternative? If the alternatives are all shut down, then maybe that is a last resort. Countries may have to go for that type of extreme step. Under the WTO, it is possible, so countries need to use it. But then a regional position is absolutely essential. That is again something which the Commission on AIDS in Asia has mentioned. So I have these few points to summarize on this, and I now request my co-chair, Myong, to give his observations.
As he said, you know, actually the International Congress on AIDS in Asia and the Pacific has provided really excellent platform, you know, for several different types of stakeholders to share their knowledge and experience. I just like to have a chance to promote again the 9th International Congress on AIDS in Asia and the Pacific. So we are going to have 9th ICAP in Bali, Indonesia next August 2009. So I hope to see all in Bali, Indonesia next year. Please come to Bali next year and share your experience and knowledge with your colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your excellent patience, understanding, and cooperation. I think this session has been extremely useful. Thank you very much.